Welcome to Up to Date. I'm Steve Kraske. Think of food banks in Kansas City, and there's a pretty good chance you think of Harvesters. Karen Heron is stepping down as Harvesters CEO, and a responsibility that involves feeding 66,000 area residents a week. Karen Heron joins us in just a little bit. First up today, the life of Martha Jefferson Randolph, who was Thomas Jefferson's eldest daughter. She also served as his first lady after her mother's death early in her life. Martha's path wasn't always an easy one. Despite her close relationship with her father, she found herself defending his character when people gossiped about his relationship with one of his slaves. She became estranged from her husband, and her family's financial situation crumbled over time. Here to tell us more about Martha's privileged but tumultuous life is Cynthia Kerner. Cynthia's biography of Martha Jefferson was published last year. She's also the director of the history doctoral program at George Mason University. She's speaking in town tonight. Cindy, welcome. So good to have you here.
Thank you. Good to be here.
Tell us a little bit about Martha's personality. If we went out to lunch with her today, how much would we enjoy it?
Well, probably a lot, if for no other reason that she was used to having good food and good wine because her father was really into that, and so she was accustomed to that. Every account that I've read of her and her personality, except for one, was just like over-the-top positive.
Wow.
That, you know, she was intelligent, she was articulate, she spoke four languages. But yet at the same time, she was modest, which is kind of an odd combination that you're really that smart and that interesting.
Yeah.
But you're very modest about it. One of the accounts, one of the fullest accounts of her personality as an adult came from Margaret Bayard Smith, who was a Washington socialite and a writer and therefore used to being with interesting people. And she made the comment that Martha was not only intelligent and interesting, but that her manners were so gracious that as soon as you met her, you felt at home with her.
Wow.
So I think lunch would be awesome.
Well, she knew, I forget the number, 9 of the first 10 presidents, 8 of the first 9. I forget the figure.
Yeah, that's probably about right. I don't think you want me to sit here and count on the radio. But so far as I can tell, she never met George Washington.
She never met George Washington, which really surprised me, considering she knew almost everybody else of that generation.
Well, I mean, she ended up meeting, like, for instance, the Adamses because they were in France when her father was.
Mm-hmm.
Madison and Monroe were kind of neighbors in central Virginia. Andrew Jackson and Martin Van Buren she got friendly with later in life, and that's one of the things I'm going to talk about tonight. And, in fact, one of her daughters was sort of an item with Van Buren for a while, although it didn't work out.
So her role within her family, was she a traditional housewife of the time, or was she something different than that?
Well, kind of both.
Yeah.
I mean, I think if you were a plantation mistress, which is what she was for most of her life in rural Virginia, you would have had a lot of quote-unquote traditional jobs that you probably couldn't have gotten out of doing even if you wanted to. You would have been in charge of not only raising the kids but probably educating them, particularly the daughters. You would have been in charge of overseeing all the sort of productive work, food-related, clothing-related work that went on a plantation. At the same time, she was somewhat untraditional in that when she educated her daughters, they were getting the equivalent of an aristocratic Paris convent education because that's what she had had.
Mm-hmm.
They never considered sending the daughters to school, partly because they couldn't afford it, but partly because I don't think it's a stretch to argue that Martha would have been the smartest woman in the entire state of Virginia.
Mm-hmm.
I also think that her role was somewhat untraditional in that while traditional housewives were hostesses, you know, she was a hostess at Monticello, where there were constantly, you know, tons and tons of visitors, some of whom were very famous and very interesting, some of whom were not, you know, and were just, you know, crazy people looking in the windows because they wanted to get a glimpse of Thomas Jefferson and they'd have to let them in and be nice to them. So there is a kind of untraditional or extraordinary aspect of her life. But other aspects of it were quite ordinary for a woman of her social class in Virginia at the time.
Now, you begin this book with a description of a night that or a day I would have loved to have attended, the visit of Lafayette 50 years after the American Revolution, 1824. He's at Monticello. Tell us about that day.
Well, I opened the book with that sort of tableau or vignette because, as I'm going to say tonight, I think it encapsulates the two really important aspects of her life. I mean, on the one hand, her life was extremely extraordinary. I mean, she's hanging out with Lafayette and with a lot of other interesting people on that occasion where the food is good and the wine is good. And, mm-hmm. and I mean, it's just an extraordinary occasion. On the other hand, there were certain aspects of that situation that would have struck a chord in the experiences of many other women in that generation. I mean, it's a family event. The, mm-hmm. the overwhelming majority of people there are family members, and it's a huge family. It's an event where they're trying to do the sort of traditional Southern hospitality. But beyond the scenes, these people are financially strapped. I mean, it's a kind of decayed gentility. So I think that the event was, you know, fabulous and interesting and star-studded, you know, as we would say today. But on the other hand, there was a kind of downside to it that I think if you were a discerning visitor, you would have noticed that as well.
I was going to say, at this point in her life, Martha Jefferson Randolph's family is sort of falling apart.
Yep.
Tell us a little more about that.
Well, she married into a branch of the Randolph family, which was a huge, illustrious family, gentry family with deep roots in Virginia. They own a lot of land. They own a lot of slaves. But like many Virginia planters, they are tremendously indebted during this period. And so the Randolphs are falling on hard times. Less obvious to a lot of people, but still important, is the fact that the same thing is happening to Jefferson. So there are all Jefferson's
who always spent way too much money for his own good, right?
Who always spent way too much money for his own good, and who was also a victim of economic circumstances in Virginia, like a lot of these other people, that land prices are going way down, particularly because people, if they need land, are moving west. They can do that. Tobacco prices are going down for a lot of the same reason. The banking system, which is, you know, utterly unregulated during this period, is incredibly unstable. And the first really serious financial panic occurs in 1819. And that's when Jefferson in particular is really ruined. I mean, he is the backer, the signer to back up some debts that a friend of his owed, so that not only does he have his own debts to worry about, but he has those debts to worry about as well. So, yeah, I mean, the family's falling apart financially, and the financial situation has personal repercussions as well. I mean, one of the reasons why Martha's husband becomes sort of mean and bitter and drunk in his old age is that he's broke. I mean, here's a guy who was the governor of Virginia, who a few years after he's the governor of Virginia can't meet the property qualifications to vote, let alone hold political office in this state where his family was one of the, you know, the proverbial FFVs, the first families of Virginia.
We're visiting with Cindy Kerner about her book, Martha Jefferson Randolph, Daughter of Monticello. She speaks this evening at 6:30 at the Kansas City, Missouri Public Library, the Plaza Branch. Her talk is part of the library's Beyond the Gown series about America's First Ladies. For more information or to reserve a seat, go to kclibrary.org. How did Thomas Jefferson feel about his daughter, regard his daughter? Because he obviously, you talk in this book about sort of the different kinds of feelings he held about women in general, I guess. He was an early sexist, I guess, to put it in blunt terms.
Well, he had lots of company. I
mean, of course,
it wasn't like he was alone. He loved her profusely, as he did his Martha's sister, Mariah, who actually died young, but they were the only two of Jefferson's six offspring to actually survive to adulthood. He loved her a lot. He thought that she was incredibly competent and intelligent. But by the same token, I think that he felt that he had this, paternal, and not just in the literal sense of being her father, mm-hmm. But a kind of manly responsibility to take care of her and to take care of her children, one that did not necessarily trump the responsibilities of her own husband, but one that in effect did, mostly because Thomas Mann Randolph was bankrupt before Thomas Jefferson was bankrupt. And I'm using that term loosely because there was no such thing as legal bankruptcy in Virginia.
Well, there's some thought, Cindy, back in those days that Martha's devotion to her father sort of maybe undermined her own marriage to Randolph.
Well, I think hindsight is 20/20, and I mean, I think that it you can make that case, but I also think that despite the fact that the marriage ended up as a wreck, for a really long time, these two people were married for close to 30 years. These two people were married, and they weren't necessarily always happy, but they certainly managed to get along, and they managed to find a way of doing things that seemed to work for them. I mean, one of the points that people often make if they talk about, you know, the Randolphs' marriage as being, you know, inevitably ruined, they say that, well, you know, in 1809, when Jefferson retired from the presidency, Martha and the children go to live with him at Monticello. And that just sort of proves that you know, her relationship to her father was more important than her relationship with her husband. Well, the husband was there, too. I mean, he sort of commuted to work at his plantation, which was nearby. And I don't know if you look at it from his perspective, you know, he's the father of 12 children. You know, this house is a zoo. Had they all stayed in their little house on their plantation at Edge Hill, it would have been more of a zoo. I mean, here is a guy who, by all accounts, was incredibly studious, was interested in science, loved books and reading and all of that. You know, I mean, I could think of reasons why I would want my 12 children to not live in my tiny little house with me if I was really interested in doing these things. So, I mean, I think that, you know, you can argue it both ways. You know, I mean, I try to, because it is a book that focuses particularly on her and on them, I try to take a really micro level look at that marriage and try to figure out when things started going wrong. And I mean, I think they do start to go wrong primarily after Jefferson retires. But I think it takes a decade or even more for things to get irrevocably bad.
Yeah.
And in fact, you know, a year before he died, Thomas Mann Randolph is writing, you know, letters to his wife saying, his estranged wife saying, oh, you know, I've always loved you. There's never been anyone else. And he's right. I mean, at a time when a whole lot of men had relationships out of wedlock, no one ever accused Thomas Mann Randolph of doing that. And that's remarkable.
I want to talk about slavery in just a moment, Cindy. But how old was Martha when her mother died? Young, fairly young.
10.
Yeah. And how did that loss impact her?
Well, I think that it certainly made her a lot closer to her father. She is the one who goes with him first to Philadelphia and then to Paris. And going to Philadelphia and especially to Paris.
Philadelphia for?
To wait to go to Paris, pretty much. Mm-hmm. But during that wait, she received some sort of education. And she experienced life in a city, which, I mean, one of the things that I find really interesting, Jefferson is well known for his hatred of cities. His daughter, although she never wrote in a letter, gee, I love cities, she clearly did, because whenever she had a choice about where she was going to live, she chose Washington, she chose Boston, she chose whatever. There's a lot more fun things for women to do in cities than there is and a plantation in the middle of rural Virginia. And I think that's an important difference. But the death of her mother made her very, very close to her father, gave her the experience of traveling with him and being in Paris. She later said that the fact that her mother died also meant that although she was incredibly well educated in terms of book learning and in terms of social graces and all of those things, she said that she knew nothing whatsoever about domestic work and about housewifery, and that she had to learn all of those things really quickly once she got married, which apparently she did. So that would have been an effect of her mother's death as well.
Thomas Jefferson was a slaveholder. He had children with Sally Hemings, one of his slaves. How did Martha Jefferson Randolph regard all of this?
We'll never know because, you know, she never wrote about it. The only
But she dealt with it all the time.
She dealt with it all the time. And I mean, that's, you know, kind of one of the definitions of what, you know, one part of the job description of being a slaveholding woman is to deal with that and to deal with it preferably quietly. And there's only in the surviving sources, there is only one piece of evidence of her even talking about that subject with anyone. And that was when she was on her deathbed, her first deathbed. I mean, she didn't actually die, but when she was on her first deathbed and everybody thought she was going to die, and all she was in Washington, D.C., and all the children came and she called her sons into the room. And basically what she said to them, and one of them later wrote this in a letter, those Sally's children were not your grandfather's children. Look at the dates at when they were born, and it's impossible. Well, of course, historians have since then looked at the dates when they were born and decided that it's absolutely not impossible, quite the opposite. Mm-hmm. But, I mean, she was very concerned about her father's historical reputation. It's not at all unusual that she didn't speak of this publicly. Jefferson himself didn't speak of it publicly. They had a real sense that this is something that is private. And
but at the time, rumors of Thomas Jefferson and his slave, Sally Hemings, were just rampant, right? There were people talked about this. They gossiped about this. The word was sort of out back in those days, despite how that story, at least in our history, was sort of covered up for so many decades and then has reemerged more recently. How rampant was the talk back in those days?
Well, historians have pieced together, sources to suggest that it was commonplace, particularly in Albemarle County, you know, which where it would have been kind of local gossip.
Mm-hmm.
But I mean, more importantly, it was published in a Richmond newspaper in 1802. It was a newspaper that was affiliated with the Federalist Party, which were Jefferson's political opponents. So, I mean, you know, they're preaching to the choir. The people reading this are already inclined to hate Jefferson. And they're like, okay, well, that's just more evidence that this is a really bad guy. I mean, the one thing that's really interesting, I think, from a present day standpoint about all the rumors and stories about Jefferson and Hemings is they did him no harm. He was elected president easily twice. Mm. Hmm. They did him no harm at all.
As a biographer of Martha, how frustrating was it not to learn more about how she felt about this, given sort of the centrality of that issue in our daily conversations about Thomas Jefferson these days?
Oh, incredibly frustrating,
yeah.
But not terribly surprising, since some awful good historians have combed through all of the evidence. And I'm really not surprised that I didn't find anything that they hadn't found already. Yeah. My focus is different, but actually the sources I'm using are very similar.
Hey, how do you think she would have felt? What would you conjure up on that idea?
Well, on the one hand, if Jefferson had remarried, and of course he couldn't marry Sally Hemings under the law, even though she was his wife's half-sister, right? If Jefferson had remarried, that really would have messed up the financial situation of his children, his legitimate, you know, quote unquote children, Martha and her sister. Because if he had remarried and the children of that marriage had been legitimate, they would have shared whatever inheritance there was to share. Now, we know, because, you know, hindsight is 20/20, that there was no inheritance to share. But at the time, you know, Martha and her sister wouldn't have known that. And in fact, that's exactly what happened in Thomas Mann Randolph's family. Thomas Mann Randolph's mother died. His father married a teenager as his second wife. They had a child, and that child, who they also named Thomas Mann Randolph, which, you know, shows absolutely no imagination. But that younger Thomas Mann Randolph was the heir to the family estate, which was also in financial ruin. So it didn't matter, but it could have mattered. Mm. So, you know, in terms of, you know, legalities and economics, Jefferson having actually married his lover would have been bad. But on the other hand, I think that Martha was, you know, she was mortified by the gossip. I'm not entirely sure that she was mortified that her father was having sex with a slave, because men did it all the time. Mm-hmm. But I'm sure that the gossip really did mortify her, hence the conversation with her sons on her deathbed when she didn't actually die.
Hmm. Why did you want to write a book on Martha Jefferson Randolph? What was the appeal, the attraction for you?
Well, as I'm going to say tonight, I'm not a Jefferson scholar. I'm someone who's written a lot about Southern women. And my last book prior to this one was actually about a sex scandal that occurred in Virginia in the 1790s in the Randolph family. And the Randolphs are just an incredibly dysfunctional bunch of people. They're one crazier and nastier than the next. And this particular scandal involved a man named Richard Randolph, who was married to one of Thomas Mann Randolph's sisters, Judith, and supposedly had a sexual relationship with Judith's younger sister, Nancy. And so the scandal unfolds and people are like challenging each other to duels and taking each other to court and all of this kind of horrible scandalous stuff is going on. You know, and Martha has married into this mess. And in the whole family, she seemed to be the only one who remained on good terms with everyone. Hmm. Who had a sort of sensible and humane approach to the family scandal. And that just struck me as really interesting. I mean, aren't women who are associated with some sort of tainted sexual situation supposed to, die alone in an alley in disgrace? And aren't you, if you're a virtuous woman, supposed to hope that that's exactly what happens?
Yeah.
Martha's response to her sister-in-law, Nancy Randolph, who was the one in disgrace, was very kind of humane. It struck me that this is somebody who was worth knowing more about, and not just because her father was this famous president.
Cindy Kerner speaks this evening at 6:30 as part of the library's Beyond the Gown series about America's First Ladies. It'll be at the library's Plaza Branch. For more information or to reserve a seat, go to kclibrary.org. Cindy Kerner's book is titled Martha Jefferson Randolph, Daughter of Monticello. It's been a pleasure. Thanks so much.
It's been nice talking to you too, Steve.
Coming up.